And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is searching. Each of my guests is explaining searching for his or her topic, whether it's searching on the internet, searching for sustainable environment, or searching for money. My next guest is a college professor at Pace University in New York, and he's an environmental activist. He's searched for and has found the solution to the capitalistic ecological crisis. We'll discuss his book, Ecology and Socialism. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. And that's the same number that you're going to want to use right now to call in if you want to win four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe, two locations to serve you, one here in Ventura, 4350 on Telephone Road in the Barnes & Noble Plaza. The other is in Oxnard at 1730 East Gonzales Road, the intersection of Gonzales and Rose. Call that number. Be the third caller at 639-0008, and those four sandwiches or those four salads are yours. My next guest, Chris Williams, is a longtime environmental activist based in New York City. He's a professor of physics and chemistry at Pace University and the chair of the science department at Packer Collegiate Institute. Chris is also a frequent contributor to the International Socialist Review, that's ISR for short. He is the author of Ecology and Socialism, Solutions to Capitalist Ecological Crisis, and this is Chris's first book. Joining us from New York City. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We love to explore all kinds of ideas. Now, your premise is that the system that is run right now on the interest of the small minority, the 1%, where profit continually outweighs the issues of hunger, waste, energy, and so forth, is the root cause of many of the world's problems. So I guess my first question to you is, if that's true, then how do you explain the world's largest communist nation, China, is also the world's largest polluter as well?
I would explain that fairly simply, and I don't think that China has any relationship to communism or socialism, and really never has. There are various different models of operating on a capitalistic type system. In other words, a system based on competition and profit. And you can have more state intervention or you can have less state intervention. At the moment, the last 30 years or so, under the neoliberal model of capitalism, many states have reduced the size of government and public spending and so on, and there's been a huge drive to privatize and cut social spending, which has led to all kinds of deregulation and disasters of that nature that we're suffering right now, the effects of. But you can go the other way too, toward more state regulation, such as, during the Second World War, for example, the United States was heavily government-controlled. Most areas of industry were under control of the government. If they went outright nationalized, then the production was directed by government interests, such as GM, etc., were producing tanks rather than cars. And so China is just an example where I think the state is essentially the capitalist entity, where top state functionaries are the capitalists who are profiting at the expense of the vast majority of Chinese people. And then that state is in competition with the United States and with all the other countries to grab a larger share of the trade pie at the expense of other countries, where they exploit and oppress less developed countries and so on, in the same way that avowedly capitalist countries do around the world. And so I don't think there's an enormous amount of difference when you look at it structurally, the way that China is organized with state control, but there's no democracy at all in China. And so socialism, if it means anything, must mean power to the people, and the people are the workers are the ones who are making the decisions, but that is clearly not the case.
All right. So China's not the case, Chris. And spin it for us. How can we solve the problems that we've gotten ourselves into ecologically with the capitalistic system? What are some of the solutions?
Well, I think, as I outline in my book, I think we have to proceed along two tracks simultaneously. One is, what could we and should we be fighting for right now as some immediate reforms within capitalism that we think will slow down, buy us some time, basically, to make some more fundamental changes, societal changes, help win us some victory so that we can gain confidence and organization from doing that. And then, but I think we also have to look to a complete change society. What would a sustainable society run in the interests of ordinary people and the biosphere really look like? And that is completely incompatible with a model, an economic model based on continuous expansion. So in terms of what some things that we should fight for in the here and now, I mean, plenty of people are already fighting. And obviously in California at the moment, there is the shutdown of the port in Oakland, where I'm involved in Occupy Wall Street here in the environmental working group. And there are active campaigns all around the country at the moment to, for example, make sure that the XL tar sands pipeline doesn't get built, and to end mountaintop removal of coal mining, to make sure that new nuclear plants are built and we don't allow any relicensing of the old ones, that we put a stop to hydrofracking for natural gas. So those are some ongoing campaigns that are building momentum, that if we can win any one of those, it will help win others. And that can be a platform to build a broader movement that says, well, there are millions of people are all over the United States that need jobs, and there are millions of jobs that need doing, real jobs that have a sustainable future. I'm not talking about building oil pipelines or nuclear plants. I'm talking about we need a whole raft of changes to our infrastructure in terms of real public transport so that we can get around safely, reliably, and cheaply with a minimum use of energy. That means train track. It means trains. We also need to be building wind turbines and solar panels. So, you know, the Obama administration at one point had basically nationalized the car companies. Why weren't they switched to, instead of producing cars, producing turbines, solar panels, train track, etc.? We need a whole new energy grid, one that is efficient and runs properly without the blackouts that California in particular has been subjected to in recent years because of deregulation and the privatization of the utilities. We need to nationalize the utilities. Actually, I would say that. It should be a service, not a for-profit industry. So those are just some examples. I mean, we also need a massive upgrade to the sanitation services around the country that are falling apart through lack of maintenance because of budget cuts and so on. And if we want to pay for that, if we don't have money to pay for that, I think we know where the money is, and that's in the banks and with the top 1%. So let's tax them at an appropriate rate so that we can recoup some money and spend it on socially useful projects that will head us towards a sustainable society. But ultimately, like I said, I think we need a vision of a totally different society, one not based on endless, pointless consumption, alienation, competition, and warfare that is predicated on building mountains and mountains of waste.
All right. My guest is Chris Williams. He's author of the book Ecology and Socialism, Solutions to a Capitalistic Ecological Crisis. And Chris, I want to challenge you a little bit, because free market capitalism has brought the world to the point of prosperity that we've never known in human history. Even the poorest people today are better off than the poor of ancient times. Life expectancy is longer. Many diseases have been eradicated. I mean, the rising tide floats all boats under the capitalistic system, and the world has solved many of its prior environmental problems before. And we've seen socialistic systems, such as the Soviet experiment in 1917, have failed over time. So what's going to make it different this time? How is today different? Why won't capitalism solve today's problems?
Yeah, those are great questions. First of all, just on the how much have we tried socialism, I think it was tried once in 1917 and for a very specific set of circumstances that it would take a little bit too long to go into, I think. It did fail and turned into a horrendous dictatorship under Stalin. But as I said, because it was in a poor and impoverished country and there weren't revolutions in other countries, it failed. But it's never really been tried since. There's been no other states that have taken power through the workers and the peasants and on a socialist model since then. So we've tried that once, and it did fail. That's true.
And you wouldn't include Cuba and China in the Great Experiment?
Not really, no. I think that they were pretty different. I think the workers played very little role in the 49 revolution in China, although I was all for the revolution, not that I was alive, but I don't think it was a socialist revolution. I think that there was an armed band, an army, the Red Army, made up mostly of the peasantry, that was a rural force that took the towns by storm with very little input from working people and their own democracy. Then a democratic involvement. So, you know, the party was elevated into power straight away, essentially. And the economic development of China took place on the backs of the workers and the peasants, who, for the most part, are still pretty impoverished and certainly don't have any democracy, which would be a cornerstone for me of real socialism. And similar arguments can be made for Cuba, even though as a nationalist revolution, I certainly supported it. Throwing off the yoke of U.S. imperialism, to harken back to an earlier type of language. But in terms of, I mean, Marx was, if you read the Communist Manifesto, Marx was certainly somebody who thought that capitalism was an amazing economic system, far better than feudalism, and had created way more than the previous economic model could possibly have done with, basically, you're either a lord and born into that, or you're a peasant and you were there forever. Under God. The problem is that it's completely outlived its usefulness. It is true that we've done some amazing things, and this system has certainly created an incredible amount of wealth. But at the same time, now we can, it's outlived its usefulness, like I said. The amount of wealth is pretty staggering. I mean, we're all faced with budget cuts, but the total remuneration to Wall Street last year was $140 billion, which is the same amount of money, actually, as the deficits for all 50 states. If you look at it globally, less than 1% of the world's population, 29.7 million people, the people who make more than $1 million a year, that's 29 million people, have $89 trillion in wealth, 40% of the total. So the level of inequality is so ginormous. And the problem ecologically for capitalism, the problem that it cannot solve, is that this system only works when it's growing. I mean, relentless growth is the mantra of every capitalist. And you can see that today. If any economy is not growing at 2 or 3%, in other words, exponential growth, the whole system goes into a tailspin of layoffs, unemployment, cuts to social programs, everything that we're now experiencing. And that's obviously a logical contradiction. You live on a finite planet. You cannot have an economic system predicated on relentless growth. That means larger and larger inputs of energy and natural resources and larger outputs of waste, something else that capitalism completely externalizes and doesn't take into account at all.
Well, Chris, it does through regulation, and that's where governments step in. Governments do regulate waste. They do regulate overconsumption on the parts of large corporations. That's why government is there, and that's where government does step in. But go on with your thesis, because my question, Chris, is why now different? You're hearkening back to a 19th century, early 20th century concept of socialism. And, you know, back then, only 25% of the world's population lived in cities. Today, it's more than 50%. Circumstances are completely different today than they were in the 19th century. So how can a 19th century form of governance really help us in the 21st century solve some of these problems?
I think it's a good question. I mean, ultimately, you could argue the same about capitalism. Capitalism came around about 350 or so years ago, and we have the same form of government then as we do now, more or less. Even the idea of neoliberalism harkens back to, you know, the 19th century laissez-faire type idea of Adam Smith from earlier times and so on. So I agree. I totally agree that the one of the purposes of government should be to regulate corporations, because left to themselves, corporations have, I mean, it's an entity, right? So they have no compulsion other than to make profit. And in fact, if you're the CEO of a corporation in the United States, you are contractually bound to maximize profit to your shareholders. That's the purpose of your job. And you'll get fired if you don't do that. So there have to be some checks and balances. Otherwise, corporations, it would be just a massive free-for-all. And regulation is the road through which that can be done. The problem is that the idea of government regulation has taken a huge hit over the last 30 years due to this idea of it's big government and it's regulation that is holding the corporations back. And if only we didn't hamstring them so much, they would be able to do even more amazing things. But that's why BP and the Gulf disaster last year happened. It's why the Upper Peak Branch mine disaster happened. It's why any number of these other accidents happen, because there has been deregulation and the government isn't regulating corporations as it should do, as it did in the past. And so one of the other things that I would definitely be strongly in favor of is tighter regulation, not just of the banks, who clearly have no moral compass whatsoever, and the bankers who run the banks, but also the corporations more generally. We need much stronger health and safety rules, because otherwise, you know, BP was fined, maybe fined, they'll fight it, no doubt, $20 billion by the Obama administration, yet their turnover is $250 billion. So it's actually not an awful lot of money, and now BP is back in the Gulf. They're also off up into the Arctic. And so how is that really any kind of solution to having a real future? I mean, we're digging for oil in new, more dangerous, more difficult places. All of these things, I think, are completely the wrong direction. And corporations clearly have the ear of government. And not just the ear, but also they're in the pocket of the corporations. So that's why Occupy Wall Street and those kind of movements have such resonance all over the world. Everybody's feeling it, that we are living in a completely unsustainable way where ordinary people are not really able to make the kind of democratic choices we should be able to make.
All right. My guest has been Chris Williams. He's the author of the book Ecology and Socialism, Solutions to the Capitalist Ecological Crisis. Chris, the time just flies by so fast. If people are intrigued by what they hear by you, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
You could check out my website, which is ecologyandsocialism.org. And I speak all over the country on these issues at various different universities and so on. And so, but that would be the best place. You can also get my email there if your listeners are interested in dialogue about these issues, because I think it's clear that there is an ecological crisis. There's also an economic crisis, and we need some better answers than the politicians are actually providing. So.
Well, you're absolutely right, Chris. We'll have to have you back to discuss this in more depth. It's a complex issue. 20 minutes just doesn't do it justice. But thank you for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks so much for inviting me.